time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Good morning. Happy New Year, brother.
Happy New Year. A lot of post-nasal drip going on in here.
Yeah. I don't know, man. New Year's...
Love it.
Oh, it's miserable for me, man.
You don't like the New Year.
Well, there's something about, like, time, and this is like a demarcation in time where you wind up reflecting back on your previous year. And,
yeah.
And I wind up getting to this funk of wondering if I'm just wondering, you know, running the standstill in life and stuff. And I just, like, would rather get past the New Year.
Buddy,
and
you had a great year.
Well,
2024 was a great year. You went to Italy.
Right, right.
You I mean, what, but do you reaching new heights.
Yeah.
Taking care of your family out there.
Yeah, but sisters, do you get it?
Doing good deeds for the community.
So, like, when your birthday comes, you don't sometimes reflect, like, what's different on this birthday than last birthday?
Yeah, I'm closer to dying.
I think about that a lot.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. I mean, I'm,
really?
You know, yeah, no, I'm ready to go. I don't want to go anytime soon.
Yeah, I need a radio partner.
But, yeah, and, you know, I've got grandbabies out there. So, but, no, you got to, you know, it's all about perspective, Michael. You know, I think you're a fabulous human being.
Well, I think you're a fabulous human being.
And there's no, you know, you're not spinning your wheels. You're out there making a difference. You're making a difference in the world.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. As are you. And as are most people. But I think there's a lot of us who deal with just this beginning of the year stuff. And you know what? It will be nice when the sun starts to stay little longer.
It's just weather.
And yet now, what have you gone to your schnooks yet? Does it look like the invasion has happened yet?
Well, and I haven't gone. I am going to go probably tomorrow, and which is, you know, it's going to be a madhouse. But you got to stock up because, you know, we got a couple inches of ice coming or sleet or little snow. Nobody's quite sure. We're going to find out, though, at the top of the hour.
Well, my phone yesterday on my walk, you know, prior to watching the Lord's team win yesterday against Georgia, Notre Dame. How great was that, John?
Not so great.
Man, I think they may go all the way to the championship. But anyway, on my walk yesterday, I was looking at the weather app on my phone.
Oh, never do that.
It said 16 to 21 inches.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
16 to 21 inches.
Yeah. The weather app doesn't know.
That's epic.
Squat.
That's epic.
Not happening.
Could you imagine what 16 inches would do to this town?
Wouldn't be good.
We have a hard time with about 3.5.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't be good. And it doesn't look like anything near that is likely to happen. But, you know, this happens. You get these alarmists out there that they tell you it's going to be the biggest snow in a century and a half.
Snowmageddon.
Yeah, and I don't think we're going to have that. But we are likely to have some dislocation as far as being able to travel by car. Especially when you get the snow and then a layer of ice and then some snow on top of it, which is where I think this thing stands right now. We've got a guest, though, don't we, Frank, at the top of the hour, the meteorologist going to talk to us? Because, you know, I know a little bit about meteorology, Michael.
The hot air, cold. And
well, you got the dew point
humidity.
Out there. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on.
And barometric pressure.
But I would not want to rely solely on my expertise to kind of tell folks what's about to happen.
So, yeah, we can dig deep with a meteorologist and a little bit as it relates to what's going to happen. But I don't know. You know, this from a political perspective, these types of snowstorms or weather events can be make or break for politicians at times. I mean, you know, if you're going to have an epic snowstorm and, you know, 3 days later the streets aren't plowed, ask Chris Christie how that ends.
Doesn't end well.
Sometimes, you have a blizzard or a tornado like we had the horrible events that took place
Hurricane.
In Joplin.
Yeah.
And a politician can shine. So I often look to who tries to capitalize and who's prepared when it comes to these natural events. And this one, somewhat predictable.
Well, and here, and this thing's going to traverse the entirety of the state. It's going to take the path roughly of that Chinese weather balloon. And so it will cross over the entire state. And interestingly, on the political side, our governor, Mike Parson, is a lame duck. He's got another week and a couple of days to be governor. So this may be his final hurrah.
I'm going to miss the governor going because he's one of my few impressions that I have right now.
You impress it.
Clean up the snow and chief. I mean, he's one of my few impressions that, and he's going away. I don't have a Mike Kehoe yet. Really don't know what he sounds like.
Sounds like he's from St. Louis.
Yeah, which I will appreciate. In fact, does he say the name of the state properly?
Yes, but he sounds at times like he's from North St. Louis.
North St. Louis?
Yes, he does. And he
drives Highway 44?
44. So if you're really from St. Louis,
yeah.
It's not 44.
Right.
It's 44.
It's over now, John. The Missouri Supreme Court has refused to take up the appeal of St. Louis County in terms of whether or not Sam Page has the right to make the appointment of Court Van Ostrom. The governor's appointment, Melissa Smith, continues to go through. She will be sworn in, I would imagine, relatively soon.
Today. You know, Sam Page has pressed this thing and pressed this thing and pressed it. He lost in the Circuit Court of Appeals. He continued to pursue this thing to the Supreme Court. They finally shut it down. Loss, loss, loss. I haven't seen three losses in a row like that since
Donald Trump.
Last season for the Cardinals. but, you know, Paige, speaking of Trump, it's a little reminiscent of Donald Trump, right? 65 lawsuits filed over the 2020 election. He lost and lost and lost. He kept going back and going back. And here's Sam Page pressing this thing without a case, clearly. Every layer of court has ruled against him. And you have to ask yourself, why was he so insistent on having his person in? Well, we know that he's been using and trying to use that prosecutor's office to go after his political foes, Dennis Hancock, no relation, on the county council, and perhaps others. So, I mean, this was a pretty telling blow to Sam Page to lose this court challenge and keep fighting it and keep fighting it. It's a bad look.
But it's not new behavior, though, right? Remember, 2 years ago, there was a fight for the chair of the county council.
Oh, yes.
Where
Hazel Irby.
There was an opening in Hazel Irby. Maybe it was more than 2 years. Obviously, the county council was starting to divide less on partisan lines at that point, more on the lines of Sam Page. And there was a struggle where Sam Page, prior to the, the end of the year, right here around the beginning of the year, wanted to have Lisa Clancy be the chair of the council. There was this big fight, a clownish-like county council meeting where two people were acting like they were running the county council. And it was this same don't back down strategy. You know, James Carville, Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, they've made a career out of being these people who take it to the nth degree. Does this strategy pay off long term for Sam Page?
No.
Because now he finds himself, on a 6-1 council?
Yeah, against him.
A prosecutor who can't be thrilled to be excited to deal with him. I doubt this lady will hold anything personally against.
She's a pro.
Yeah, I think she's a pro. But, what's next?
Well, and here's what's remarkable to me. You've got to have some real something. Here you are. You are the executive branch leader, and you have a majority in the legislative branch. Your party does. So in a real world sense, your objective as a leader is to make sure that your agenda gets enacted. So you've got a 4-3 and maybe at times 5-2, but it's certainly 4-3 majority on the council. And the county executive, the same party, Democrat, has managed in the course of his tenure to take a legislative majority and single-handedly turn it against him so that he cannot enact his agenda. Think about the lack of political acumen it takes to accomplish that feat. That's a very hard thing to do, to take a majority and turn it into a 6-1 minority against you. That tells you something.
I guess what's also interesting to me is you and I have been around hundreds, thousands of politicians.
Years. I thought you were going to say
years. Yeah, hundreds, thousands of politicians. And there's two types of politicians, two ways of politics. One is getting power, and then another is actually utilizing it to accomplish things. And most politicians I know really want to be able to get in to implement some reform or something that motivated them to get into politics. But there are those rare exceptions of people who just want to have power and never are able to utilize it because they're too busy trying to hold power. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the point of being the county executive if you can't get anything done?
There is an art to politics, and whether people want to believe it or not, political skill is a real commodity. It's a commodity in the body politic. It's a commodity in the workplace. You've seen it. Being able to politic, which means the definition of politics is who gets what how. And being able to effectively put together coalitions to accomplish objectives that are important to you is a political skill. And some people are particularly gifted in that area, and I don't agree with her on much, but Nancy Pelosi has a tremendous amount of political skill when it comes to, you know, to ushering in a coalition to accomplish whatever she wants to do. She's one of the best at it of all time. Roy Blunt,
right,
who was the whip in the U.S. Senate for years, was particularly gifted at putting together the 51 votes needed to get something passed. And there were many times where he had to get folks from the other side of the aisle on board to accomplish his objectives. It's a skill.
Yep.
It is clear to me that Sam Page does not possess that particular skill. I'm sure he's quite good as an anesthesiologist. At least I hope he is quite good as an anesthesiologist. He's been effective at getting elected, although he's a Democrat in a majority Democrat county. So, how much of that is skill versus circumstance, I can't say. But what I can say is that when you look back across the history of St. Louis County executives, whether it be Charlie Dooley, Stenger is his own. He kind of divided the council as well and ended up paying the ultimate price for that. But you go back and you look at a Buzz Westfall, even the cup of coffee that H. Milford had, certainly Gene McNary, certainly Lawrence Roos, that takes you back 60 years. And you look at that parade of county leaders in St. Louis County, all of them have had some degree of real political skill. Sam Page clearly does not possess that, and it's to his own political detriment, but more importantly, it's to the detriment of the St. Louis County and to our region to have a dysfunctional government now in the county joining, in my opinion, the dysfunctional government we have in the city of St. Louis.
Not much to add. Speaking of people trying to get power, hold power, and utilize power, Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, he came in as a result of somebody not being able to hold on to power.
Like, for somebody.
Yeah, and the chaos of the Republican Party. Well, now, John, the Republicans have the most narrow majority they've had. They're within one seat. They control two seats. They control Congress. But it appears as though there may be a struggle as to whether or not Mike Johnson will be the Speaker. And more importantly, if he's going to be able to be an effective Speaker, because they're going to have that same hammer over his head that they had over Kevin McCarthy.
So the situation is there's 219 Republicans, 215 Democrats, one vacancy. That's our good friend Matt Gaetz down in Florida who resigned. So it will take 218 votes, if everybody votes, 218 votes to elect a Speaker, which means Johnson can effectively afford to lose one Republican, assuming all the Democrats vote for Hakeem Jeffries for Speaker, which they will. And if there are two Republicans that choose to vote against Johnson, then we're going to have a second ballot. And if that persists, a third ballot and so forth. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen because the Republicans are so disciplined. I think it's not going to happen because the amount of pressure coming. And remember, this is a Donald Trump-endorsed candidate for Speaker in Mike Johnson. That's pretty powerful in the Republican Party these days. So the intense amount of pressure that's going to come on a Chip Roy or a Congressman Massey from Kentucky, who have both kind of expressed some wariness about supporting Johnson, I think he's going to get elected today, 219 to 215, but I've been wrong before.
Two new faces show up in Congress from Missouri. One is Congressman Wesley Bell. The other is Congressman Bob Onder, both from the St. Louis area, both winning primaries of consequence. That first term is an important one, John. A lot of congresspeople, if you can get past that first term and get yourself reelected, it's awfully hard to take out an incumbent. These two guys have eyes on them after the battles they had.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Cori Bush made it a couple of terms and that was it, but she was her own worst enemy. You know, it's going to be real interesting because what you'll learn in these first few months, certainly in the first year of a new member of Congress, you're going to find out what they're all about. Are they somebody that is going to focus on passing legislation? Are they somebody that's going to focus on charting out a particular path within their respective parties to gain more prominence nationally? Are they somebody that's going to keep their head down and focus on serving their constituents, which is an important role for a member of Congress? We may have suspicions about both of these folks, but time will tell, and we're going to learn an awful lot about them. In Ander's case, he's replacing a 16-year congressman in Blaine Lutkemeyer, who was the ranking Republican on the banking, I think it was a banking committee, but he was a senior Republican on a number of important committees. And Bell replacing Cori Bush. In Bell's case, he's got small shoes to fill. In Ander's case, he's got large shoes to fill, and we'll keep an eye on both.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And if you're driving by the post office or a governmental building today, you probably saw the same thing that I did, which is the flags are at half staff. And, of course, that's in remembrance of our former president, over 100 years old. Jimmy Carter passed away this week, John. I have to tell you, I wasn't politically conscious when he was president.
It's because you were pooping in your diapers.
Yeah, and so most of what I know of Jimmy Carter comes from the history books and from the way that his life and political times were retold by others, including his own political enemies. What I do remember is the decency of this man and what he did for our country in terms of really showing class, example, and being true to his faith. I know that I look forward to watching his eulogies over the next couple of days and remembrances for his incredible service to our country. You have any thoughts on President Carter?
Oh, I do. You know, he came at a time out of nowhere to win the presidency in 1976 on the heels of Watergate, which was at the time the biggest scandal in American presidential history. And he served one term, and typically a president who serves one term and doesn't get reelected had some rough going in their one term of office. Carter certainly did. The combination of high inflation and interest rates, the Iran hostage crisis, and the ensuing failed rescue attempt, all of those things, I think, conspired against him. He did some good things as president. Thinking about the Mideast peace accords between Egypt and Israel, one of the probably singular foreign policy accomplishments of a president. Generally, his post-presidency has been lauded, and generally it should be, but I remember how he meddled with Middle Eastern countries, urging them not to join the coalition during the Gulf War era, something that would be unprecedented for a U.S. president. So it's a mixed record, but a good and decent man.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Our country will remember him. And it's quite a month that we have ahead of us. We have a swearing in of a new governor here in Missouri. We have a new old president coming back to the White House here in the middle of January.
Yeah, we're moving from an 81-year-old to a 78-year-old.
Lots of pageantry and the majesty of democracy taking place. We'll cover it right here on KMOX. Here comes the news.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
All right, so I'm aggravated, right?
I'm nervous.
Yesterday, I found out on my phone, I was so excited, we were going to have 16 to 20 inches of snow. Listen, if we're going to have snow, let's let it be epic, right? And as the night went on, the forecast changed. And then Joe Lundberg just said in that newscast right there, it may only be 3 to 4 inches. Mm. So I want to get Lundberg on with us, AccuWeather meteorologist.
Here's a guy that's trained. I mean,
yeah,
he
knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Joe, you there?
I'm here.
How does this happen? How does it go from yesterday, you telling me that it was going to be 20 inches?
Well, he didn't tell you that,
Michael. Or my app did on my phone.
But your app,
to now it's going to be 3 to 6 inches. Is there any chance that that pendulum can swing back just as quickly?
It's all dependent on the storm track. I mean, if it stays far enough south, then we don't get the warm nose of that nose of warm air aloft that would change the snow over to sleet and or freezing rain, and then we get much higher snow totals. But I think that that's going to stay north of the city. I think in the downtown areas, it's got to go over to sleet and freezing rain for a time. It just looks like there's too much warm air aloft, and that means lower snow totals.
So are there people within maybe, you know, a certain distance of St. Louis who are going to see ridiculous totals of like 20 inches?
I mean, I think 20 inches is probably a little excessive, but I could see more than a foot in some places, within 50 miles of St. Louis. And all you have to do is go north. You go south and you're going to see much less in the way of snow because there's going to be a lot more sleet and freezing rain. Regardless of how much snow you get or don't get, I think there's going to be just a lot of travel nightmares across the region Sunday and Sunday night that may linger through Monday simply because this stuff is not going to melt behind it. We're going to be in the 20s during the storm and no better than the 20s behind it for Monday and Tuesday.
Well, and that's the thing. And, you know, this is an educatable moment here, Joe, because people out there are looking at their weather on their phones thinking that somehow their phone knows something about the weather. Well, the phone's not out there looking at Doppler. The phone is out there doing whatever it does. And if you want accurate information, you got to go to somebody that knows what they're doing, who's been to school. He's a trained, licensed meteorologist, which is hard to say. And so here we have Joe. Let's first tell the people not to trust their phones for their weather forecast.
Yeah, don't trust the technology. But I think you can put a little bit more faith in us simply because I'm not acting on an island. I've got a whole team behind me that's been looking at this, poring over the data, and looking at everything over the past several days. And this is the conclusion that we as a team collectively have come up with. And we believe that 3 to 6 inches is the most realistic forecast in the heart of the city, with higher amounts to the north because of less mixing and less to the south because there's less snow, period. There's just going to be more sleet and freezing rain.
And so it looks like right now we're going to get a little coating of snow, throw some ice on top of that, and then top it off with some more snow. Is that...
I think that's exactly right. I think when it comes in, it's probably snow, lasts for a few hours, mixes with sleet, and then maybe a little freezing rain, and then it goes back to snow probably by the end of the day, Sunday, and you get a couple of inches of snow on top of that Sunday night, and then it all moves away early Monday.
Is that better from a driving standpoint than having the ice laid down first, or is it a wash?
I think it is better. Sleet is not fun to drive in, but it's better than freezing rain. Let's just put it that way. And having the snow as the base, I think, is helpful. You can get a little traction with that. If it were to come in as freezing rain or just pure sleet, that wouldn't be very good at all. So having the snow first may be helpful, although there may be concerns that some of that melts a little bit, then it freezes, then you get the sleet on top of that. So regardless, it's still going to be very, very hard to drive around this stuff Sunday and Sunday night.
I guess the technical term for this is nasty.
Exactly.
And
then bitter cold follows the storm system. I mean, we're going to have days with temperatures in the 20s with nighttime lows in the single digits.
What is that, the polar vortex that's going to happen?
An Arctic blast.
Oh. It's an Arctic blast. It's not record-setting, but it's just going to be bitter.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. I've got a particular interest in the governor's inauguration in Missouri, which is going to take place on Monday, the 13th of January in Jefferson City. Will this stuff be out of the way by then, or are we going to be beset by this bitterly cold weather for the foreseeable future?
It'll be cold, but I don't think it'll be bitter, but hopefully it'll be dry, and I think it will be on then.
Oh, well, that's good news.
I have to run, gentlemen. I've got to go.
Go. Do your cast. We'll break it down. Thanks so much, Joe.
That's Joe Lundberg. He's the AccuWeather for you.
Didn't get to ask him.
He was enough of us.
Well, he's got stuff.
If he's going to Schnucks.
He's got his eyes in the radar out there, the Doppler. I mean, he's looking at the Doppler. And so I didn't get to ask him about that weather balloon because it seems to me.
It's following that trajectory.
Not to be a conspiracy theorist, Michael.
No, not you.
But it seems to me like this storm is tracking at about the same trajectory as that weather balloon that passed by last year.
Did you see that there is, this weather phenomenon that this storm is generating like some of the largest waves on the coast of California they've seen, and they think a guy surfed a 108-foot wave there yesterday, breaking a world record?
Wow.
And it's, and you see this thing being formed out in California, and it's going to come to St. Louis. I just hope something blows it a little bit more towards us and not north. I don't like ice, man. Ice takes down power lines.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
Because when the power goes out,
it's cold.
The food goes bad.
Yeah.
And when
you just take the food and put it outside, John.
Well, now there's an excellent point.
Yeah. When you were younger, didn't you guys like put your sodas or, you know, your stuff out on the back porch.
You got to be careful with the sodas on the back
porch. They'll start exploding.
Yeah, and you know, that's the last thing you want is an exploding Coke all over the glass.
So I'm bachelor, right? Yeah. You know, you come to my refrigerator, it's pretty much just Waterloo, the bubble water, you know, the whole
that's
refrigerator.
All you got in there.
But, yeah.
Well, what do you eat?
Well, I kind of go to the grocery store, you know, and buy enough stuff for 24 or 48 hours. Yeah, I am. Yeah. I'm one of the people they're warning.
Uh-huh.
But the other day, I had gotten this water, and I wanted to chill it real quick, so I pushed down the temperature on my refrigerator.
Whoa.
So that the water would chill up. You know, when you got a bunch of water in there, I forget about it.
Oh, boy.
I fall asleep.
Oh,
at nighttime, all of a sudden, I hear... And I
and
hop
living
up
in the
and
city,
I'm, yeah, I'm thinking
in
gunshots.
The city, that's
oh, man,
startling.
What's going on? And I go into the front, and sure enough, the refrigerator, I got waters exploding, you know, in my refreezer, and it wasn't even the deep freeze.
Well, how low did you turn it down?
I don't know. I guess there's like 10 little numbers. I had taken it down to like 3.
They don't care. No, I'm sure you got the most fanciest refrigerator.
Man, my refrigerator, it's like a third the size of a regular refrigerator.
Huh.
I told you, I made everything simple in my life. Yeah. I just don't want to have a lot of stuff.
Got a teeny tiny
I wonder
fridge.
Why you're single, kid, and not running, you're running to stand still. I live in a hotel room.
Well, it is, but it's a nice hotel room.
It is a nice hotel room, but I am going to hit the grocery store this morning. I saw the rush happening yesterday. And now, is there something that you will prepare to be snowed in? Like, are you a chili guy where you'll go and...
Got
make
chili.
Some chili and
got,
leave it on for 24
I've
hours.
Got chili sitting in the refrigerator
now.
As we speak. No, what I'm going to do, because Georgiana is, she's tooling out of town for a couple of
really?
Days.
Really? Yeah. A bachelor.
And I will be a bachelor. And so, you know, when I know the weather's coming, it's all about the meat.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to get every kind of meat imaginable. I'm going to get beef. I'm going to get chicken.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to get pork. Might even get some fish.
Lamb?
No
lamb.
No. but I am going to get all that other stuff. And then I'm really into these boxes of potatoes. Have you seen these things?
Boxes?
Yes.
Like where you just add water?
Yes.
And they're mashed potatoes?
No, not mashed potatoes. Huh. Potatoes au gratin.
Really?
And they come in the little potato chips. You know, they're all freeze-dried or whatever. I'm sure there's maybe some processed food.
Yeah, maybe something in there.
And you throw the little cheese stuff on top of it, and you throw it in the oven there. Oh, it's heaven.
He is John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. Hey, when we come back, it's everybody's favorite segment, Potpourri with Hancock and Kelly, next on the Mighty Mox. Well, John, there was a football game yesterday as a result of the terrible tragedy that took place in New Orleans, that terrorist attack that we continue to learn more information about. And I'm sure we'll continue to see heightened security around the country as we got inaugurations coming up. We've got football games coming up and people who clearly want to act a fool and get attention. But yesterday I wound up sitting down with friends watching the Notre Dame game. Did you watch Notre Dame in Georgia?
I did not. I had it. It was on, but I'm kind of busy these days, so I didn't get to. I would run up every now and then and just check the score.
All right. So something happened to me in this new world that would have never existed 2 years ago, since we've all gone to streaming. Right? You know, life's going to be easier with streaming.
Well,
it's going to
so
be cheaper.
More options.
You're going to get to pick what you want to do.
Yes.
You know, now you're having to pay for football games. You're having to do this. Yeah. You're having to log into this app. You're
there
having
is,
to log into
there
that
is
app.
That. Yes.
Yesterday, we're watching the game. It's still the first quarter. The Georgia's still in the game. The quarterback for Georgia steps back.
Backup quarterback. Right?
Yeah. Rifles his arm, throws the ball in the air to what clearly is going to be a 20, 30, 40-yard pass.
Wow.
And with that, the television freezes.
No.
And says, are you still there?
Yes.
I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I'm watching this sport, and now you're asking me if I'm still here. So now the panic of, where's the remote control? Everybody in the room's running around looking for the remote control, you know, to find it to be able to say, yes, I'm here. I want to continue to watch my game I turned on.
So it just
ever happened to you?
Yoga all the time.
Yeah, it's so that I guess you're not, you know, continuing to have streaming coming
you
on.
You get the little round thing there, and then nothing's happening.
Yeah.
So
are you still there?
Now, when
of
you,
of course, I'm here.
So what happens? So you pick up the remote.
Well, I push it, pick up the remote.
The OK button.
20 seconds later, I hit the OK button.
Does it pick it up where it left
off? Right, it picks up where it left off. Fortunately,
yeah.
And you know, and then we're all out of whack after that. But I mean,
because the game never catch, so you never actually catch up to real time.
Well, when commercials happened, I wound up flipping to another channel and coming back, and then it resets itself.
Oh.
But I just found that to be frustrating, and it could not have. I mean, it was like a you want to get away commercial. Like, are you serious? We were wanting to see this, and
here's the worst part of that. The very worst part of that. Because this has happened to me on a couple of Cardinal broadcasts over the last year. So I'm on the MLB app on my phone. I've got the app, which is very nice. It gives me updates in real time. So I'm watching a game. I think it was Goldschmidt at the plate. And he gets into a ball. And freeze.
Right.
And it was, so then up on my phone, Paul Goldschmidt flies out to end the game, you know, 3-2 Milwaukee Brewers. And then the television comes back on. That's a little anticlimactic.
Exactly.
You know, it's ridiculous.
It is.
Very frustrating.
One of the other things I thought was kind of neat watching the game yesterday is Georgia is an SEC team like Mizzou.
Yep.
And they have the patch on their jersey that says SEC. We've all seen it on their left breast collar there.
Yeah.
It would say SEC.
Mm.
Well, those who were seniors who've graduated, underneath it had like they would put under a military, a half moon that would say SEC graduate. And now,
but there wasn't a lot of those.
Yeah, there
around.
Was maybe like three or four of them. Uh-huh. You had to pay close attention because, you know, but there were three or four of them that had, and I thought that's kind of cool that they're acknowledging that this, you know, football stuff still is really all about school.
Of course it's not about school. You know, that's the most ridiculous thing. I mean, you may happen to get a degree, but you know what they ought to have on that little half moon under there?
What's that?
$2.5 million this year. I mean, you know, these kids are all making bank out there. I'd love to know how much these guys are making, at least in the professional sports. You sign a contract, and, you know, it's Paul Goldschmidt. 1 year, $12.5 million, probably has some incentives in there. These guys out there running around on the field, you don't know what they're making. But if they had that little half moon, you know, poor guy only made $700,000.
Yeah.
You know,
but at the end of the day, it's kind of cool that they says graduate under it, just like Herschel Walker was an SEC graduate. They get the same title that he had.
Well, I hope they don't graduate with a – with a computer programming degree, because apparently those jobs are all going to be taken by H-1B visas.
H-1B visas. Yeah.
So I thought we had a
vaccine for that H-1B problem.
Well, they used to. It's not good. But, you know, seriously, what are these kids graduating with in college?
I have no idea.
Players?
I mean, come on. They're playing football. They're not going to school.
I mean, they're getting a degree in something.
And I don't blame them.
It's not likely.
I don't blame them.
To pay big dividends for
it's no different than some kid going and being in minor league ball. I mean, it's just a different way of doing it. I mean, we've got to restructure it. And to be honest with you, I think it's going to take the federal government having to play a role
in all seriousness, though, you think about these kids that they get a full ride scholarship. They go to school. They're pretty good. Linebacker. And now they've got this name, image, likeness money, so they're making some bank while they're in school. And I'm sure that a far larger number of them believe they're going to make the NFL than the number that actually do.
Sure.
And so you go to school, you're getting paid well to play football in college, thinking that there's a payday at the other side in the pros, and that never happens. And are they prepared to enter the real world and get a job? I
arguably maybe more prepared than they were 2 or 3 years ago, because I'm not sure these guys were getting degrees either way, John, most of them. And I'm not trying to,
but I do think about those guys. I mean, there's, you know, the athletes that make it, they make it.
Sure.
And even if they have a brief career,
exceptions, though.
if they manage their finances well, I mean, they will have a considerable nest egg from which to build. But these kids that get out of college with a degree and get cut in training camp and maybe get on a practice squad and maybe make the minimum for a year and then they're gone, I tend to think that story is much more common than the kid that signs a 3-year contract. And you wonder whatever becomes of these folks who were stars when they were kids. They were stars when they were high school. They were stars in college. And now they're 24 years old and don't have a job, and the prospects aren't great.
Well, or they're figuring it out like the rest of us.
Well, that's
going into sports is a choice. And there is a big payday. And unfortunately, there's also some consequences, some of them health related. So one of the other games last night was Ole Miss, and it got me thinking about Ole Miss. A cup of coffee in Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Had a year there, enjoyed it.
Imagine two very famous authors
are from Oxford, Mississippi.
You don't say.
One, William Faulkner.
Ah, yes.
You know William Faulkner.
Yes.
Did you ever have to read his books in high school?
Might have been assigned it.
Yeah. And then another one is John Grisham.
I might have read one of his books, or maybe even two.
Yeah. Now, John Grisham. I have to confess, I'm sure I read a William Faulkner book. I knew all about William Faulkner when I was at Ole Miss because they teach you all about William Faulkner.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember any of the books that I read.
Well,
but
I had that one, the big one, you know.
What, a house or barn burning something like that? Who knows? But I do remember John Grisham books.
Yep.
And, of course, we all know The Firm and, you know, The Pelican Brief and all these books that became. But you know what the best John Grisham book is?
What?
It's a book close to our hearts here in St. Louis. It's called A Painted House. Have you ever read it?
Oh, yeah. I have not read Painted House, but I know of it.
Yeah, and it's kind of a semi-autobiographical book that he wrote, story from the South, growing up in Arkansas, and it takes place around Camel X, and the family would listen to the radio and Harry Carey and Jack Buck.
Wow.
And when I tell you that Camel X and Harry Carey, Jack Buck, are a theme throughout this book. It's from page one to the very last page. It plays a huge role. And so if you like John Grisham books, pick up a copy of it because it has a lot about a Camel X in there too.
The Painted House. That's fascinating. I may have to put that on my must-read list, and I think I will do that. But I can't do that until we have the news, which is coming up next. When we come back, Father Dylan Schrader opened up a time capsule from 25 years ago, and he's going to join us and tell us what he found. That's next on KMOX.
Welcome back to KMOX, the Hancock and Kelly Show. And John, when I was a kid in school, they would have us put together these time capsules sometimes where we would all bring something in and put it into a time capsule, and they buried it, and it was going to get open 20 years later. I never found out whatever happened to any of those.
Huh.
The other day, I was surfing the internet on Twitter, and I came across a feed from a Father Dylan Schrader who said, I'm opening up my Crayola time capsule from the year 2000. Mm. And what was inside was unbelievable. The more I watched what was inside the capsule, I wanted to find out more about Father Schrader. And then I find out he's from Missouri, Hannibal, Missouri. He's a priest right here in the Missouri area. He's a priest at St. Joseph's in Westphalia. He also serves as a priest at St. Anthony's in Folk, Missouri, and he's kind enough to join us here on KMOX. Father, thanks so much for taking some time.
Oh, glad to be with you. Thank you so much.
So this is 1999. Set the story on how you came about putting together this time capsule, where you were, and what you found when you decided to open it.
Well, so I was 14, and, you know, the year 1999 going into 2000, everyone was focused on the millennium, and so that was all over the place, both in terms of worry about Y2K and in terms of marketing and things like that. So Crayola apparently had put out these time capsule activity kits, and I think it was my mom's idea that we would put these together, so my brother and I did that. I had the plan of burying it somewhere, but I never got around to it, and I've just kind of held on to it all these years. And so my brother mentioned on New Year's Eve that he was thinking about his time capsule because he had set the date of 2025 on it. Mine didn't actually have a date, but I thought, well, if he's going to open his, I'm going to open mine. So I went ahead and cracked it open.
And Father, what did you find in there?
Well, the only things I really remembered putting in there were some floppy disks. I knew that I'd put some disks in there, and I really didn't know what else was going to be in there. But I found a lot of random little items. I found some pogs. I found some pamphlets, some photos of my family, receipt from Walmart, some state quarters. postage stamp, looks like a magnet for Pizza Hut delivery, and a couple other little odds and ends.
And so you have recollection of putting it together, but you, outside of the floppy disk, you didn't remember anything. And you posted some of those pamphlets, and having just gone through COVID, I thought it would be interesting if you kind of talked through what you saw in some of those pamphlets.
Yeah, so this was a shock to me when I opened this thing up. There are pamphlets about AIDS, HIV, alcohol, and drugs. And some of the folks on Twitter, I guess, think that I put these in here deliberately for some reason, but I honestly have no recollection of doing that. And what my theory is that they were free. So, you know, I was a kid, and everything in here is stuff that I already had that's not of much value, or stuff that I could get for free. The other thing was that we heard about these things a lot. So, you know, when I went to public school, I remember we were constantly hearing about AIDS, HIV, STDs, those kind of things. So I guess I thought it was a good idea to put those in as a reflection of the society at the time.
We are visiting with Father Dylan Schrader from Westphalia, Missouri, and curious about the contents on the floppy disks. Have you been able to read those suckers?
Not yet. I'm hoping to be able to do that. So, you know, if I'm able to get onto these disks and if they're still good, I'll post what I find, presumably. One is labeled Me and My Family, and I have no idea what's on that one.
Wow.
And one is labeled English 1, which I'm assuming is referring to my high school English class. So I don't know if that's stuff that I wrote or if I just reused the disc. No idea.
Might have a term paper on that thing from back in the day.
It's possible. So I'm going to try to get these accessed here and see what's on there.
What's your Twitter handle? That's hard to say.
Oh, it's at Fr Dylan Schrader. It's Father Dylan Schrader.
So anybody that knows how to read a floppy disk out there within the sound of my voice, if you'll just tweet or X or whatever we're calling it these days at Father Schrader, I'm sure he would be most grateful. We'd all like to know what's on those floppy disks. So really interesting. Michael, my partner here, has really finds you to be a fascinating character. You do have a fascinating background, and the priesthood was not something that was immediately in your future. Talk about your journey in the faith.
Yeah, so when I put this time capsule together, that was a really significant year in my life. I had actually just started at St. Thomas Seminary up in Hannibal, which is a high school seminary. So for boys thinking about the priesthood, you know, at that stage, it's really early. You're not locked into anything. You're just kind of thinking about it. But you know, I had experienced a very strong personal conversion to Jesus and to the Catholic faith over the year or so preceding that, through the example of my mother and the influence of our family. And so I'd begun to really take my faith seriously. And out of that, had started to think about the priesthood, to, you know, think maybe God was inviting me to help make him known to other people. Both my parents worked with people in need. My dad was a social worker. My mom worked with children in foster care and in a variety of ways. You know, I had this sense that there was a lot of need in the world and that the presence of God and helping people was really important. So one of the most powerful things for me was the experience of the sacraments, the Eucharist and confession, recognizing that God meets us in these concrete ways. So I really started thinking when I was 14, you know, I really want to become a priest. And so I happened to grow up in a town that had, you know, a high school seminary, which I thought was normal. Didn't realize that that was actually pretty uncommon even back then. And so made the decision to go there and just kind of try it out. So yeah, in the time capsule itself, I wrote in my activity book that when I grow up, I will be a priest. And that happened. I was ordained in 2010 by the grace of God. And I've served as a priest for almost 15 years now.
Hey now. And Father, it was just interesting to read about your background as I was looking through your pictures that you posted of things that were making your impression. It was so sweet. It was so innocent. You can see some of your thoughts of religion, but you clearly were in an evolution to where you wound up becoming today. Are you surprised with the reaction on social media? I've noticed that some people have been hostile with you, and it's unbelievable that something so sweet and innocent can be misconstrued and messed with like this, right?
Well, I was surprised that anyone outside of maybe five people saw this at all, much less thought that it was interesting. So I posted this for the family and friends who follow me. I don't use any other social media, so I don't use Facebook or, you know, anything else, whatever else is out there. So I basically just use Twitter. And so I thought, well, I'm going to open this thing up. I'll post it. And people took an interest, both positive and negative, of course. Some people are calling it the worst time capsule they've ever seen or things like that. You know, it's just a reflection of the things I had on hand as a child and I guess some of my personal thoughts about what the future might be like. And so, yeah, in retrospect, some of it is a little silly and maybe even a little embarrassing. But I think overall the reaction's been very positive. I guess one thing it makes me think about is that people have this sort of longing for home, a sort of nostalgia. And I guess it points to the idea that we all have this sense of the shortness of our life and how quickly time passes. And to me, that's a reflection of the restlessness of our hearts, that our hearts are restless until they rest in God. Like we're all looking for something greater. We're all looking for the place where we're really at home. So anyway, I've been very encouraged by the positive comments and interest that people have taken.
You're in the Jefferson City Archdiocese, yes?
Yeah, the Diocese of Jefferson City, correct.
I'm working on a project with Monsignor Carricchi right now, and I'm sure he's an acquaintance of yours.
Oh, absolutely. I served with him for several years.
I wanted to ask you before we let you go, and just fascinating to hear about your journey and the contents of the time capsule, but more for me, your journey. You know, so much is being written these days about the lack of the institutional church in terms of attendance and that a lot of falling away from organized religion. You're in a rural community in Westphalia. What is it that you think is keeping people away from the church, or have you not seen that in your local area?
We've seen it. This is a very Catholic area, so we're blessed by that fact, but that can also be a hindrance in the sense that we take our faith for granted. You know, sometimes when Catholics have to fight for their faith, when it's not a part of the culture, we appreciate it more, the great gift that we have in Jesus. I do think the church is going through a time of great transition, and it's a painful one because we've lost as a culture, the sense of the importance of God and of religion. So we don't live in a society that sees, for example, church attendance as a normal thing or as just an expectation of being a quote-unquote decent person. So with the loss of that, I think the cultural expression of faith is going to pretty much go away. So in other words, people are going to have to be really serious about their faith or they're not going to have it at all. I do think God is going to work through that to bring about a great renewal, but it's probably going to be painful. On the positive side, I think that as people become more and more disillusioned with the world, as they realize the world has so little to offer us, it offers us entertainment and distraction and all these things, but we all know that's not enough. The message of the gospel is going to be more powerful than ever. You know, I think people are discovering, sadly, through the misery that we experience in our society, that we need something more, that we need to bring God back into our lives.
Well, Father, I can't tell you how grateful I was to stumble upon your Twitter feed. It's Father F.R. Dylan, D-Y-L-A-N, Schrader, S-C-H-R-A-D-E-R, on Twitter. It was a remarkable story. I hope you continue to post what you find inside your time capsule, and thank you for your service to your flock and joining us here today on Camo X.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Good luck with those floppy disks.
I'll work on it.
Yeah, John, you and I are going to have to go dig in some of our backyards and see if we have any of those old capsules we might have buried. We'll be back after this right here on KMOX. Uh-oh. Go with me on this.
All right.
In downtown St. Louis, we need to build a huge outdoor hockey rink with the stands around it so that the Blues play all their games outside.
They are pretty good
because they are 3-0 in this Winter Classic.
Oh, well, we got the Winterfest going on at Keener Plaza. That's pretty close.
Yeah. Maybe they can do it right there. But, yeah. I mean, did you see that game at Wrigley Field?
I did. I love the Winter Classic. You know, and the thing about it, it's unusual playing mm-hmm. hockey outside in terms of the pro sport. But when you think about all these kids, many of them from Canada, they grew up playing and learning hockey outside.
Right.
It's the natural state of playing the game. And you've got the elements and the wind. It was windy the other day in Chicago. A little bit of rain as well. There have been Winter Classics where the snow was falling. And there's something about that, I don't know, from my perspective. And it's a different game because the fans are far away. They're far removed from the rink. And so the players can actually communicate with one another. And if you listen closely, you can hear Jordan Binnington saying, you know, left or whatever. And so it's just a different experience of watching the game. And for the aesthetically inclined, the uniforms are always different.
Yeah.
I loved the throwback uniforms that the Blues had on New Year's Eve. And yeah, they played very well. They looked really good. Now, Chicago's not that great of a team.
Right.
But they shut down Connor Bedard, who is, you know, going to be one of the best players in the NHL. So, a lot to like there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's fun to see it played outside. There's a movie called Mystery Alaska that Russell Crowe was in. And it takes place in Mystery Alaska. And the New York Rangers come to play ice hockey outside, blah,
in
blah,
Mystery
blah.
Alaska.
It's a great story. If you like the Winter Classic, you'll love that
movie. Is
this
the one where Sarah Palin sings the national anthem?
No, she's too busy looking out her window for Russia, but it's a great flick. But, hey, you know, this does feel similar, though, that the Blues seem to be revving it up. They're coming home now for, what, 7 games in January?
Yeah, they've been on the road a lot.
And, you know, they fired a coach this year. The team was in the cellar. Things are looking up. Could it be, one might say, Gloria time again?
No.
Okay.
But I will say this about 2018. It was the Christmas time of 2018, and we were the voice of the Blues back then.
Uh-huh.
Blues were in last place. And I might have even been this particular week between Christmas and the new year and getting back. And Chris Kerber, the voice of the Blues, was strolling through, and I think it was with Bruce Affleck, who's a longtime Blues executive, former player, just got some big award from the Blues. And they were walking through the building. And I remember this like it was yesterday. And I looked at him, and I said, well, it's all over, boys. And they both said, it's not over. And they were right, and I was wrong. That's a stark memory for me. Now, I do not think this particular squad at this particular time has the talent that 2018-2019 Blues team possessed. You know, I mean, we had Alex Steen on the fourth line of that team.
Right.
But they have played better of late. They had a clunker the other night against the Sabres, one of the worst teams in the league, and lost. Wayne Gretzky said he thinks the Blues are going to make a run.
Exactly. So. And in the words of Chris Kerber, it ain't over, John Hancock.
Yeah, I suppose.
Have some faith, my friend. Hey, found it interesting. Obviously, the Cardinals were in this fire sale rebuild, whatever we're calling it. We couldn't go any further down. We're going to turn this thing around. They were unloading talent. Are you surprised that nobody seems to be interested in Nolan Arenado?
Well, you've got to have a need there. It's not like the guy is, you know, a utility-type player that you can plug and play at different spots. You need to have a third baseman. He's a exceptionally above-average defensive third baseman, still is. So, you know, that's going to be appealing for some teams. But let's face it, his last 2 years of offensive production have been less than Nolan Arenado's career record would predict. And so I think there's some concern. He does carry a hefty contract, north of $30 million. Now, the Blues would have to eat some of that, if not a bunch of that, in order to entice a suitor. They had a suitor and it looked like the Houston Astros, and Arenado didn't want to go there. He's got a no-trade clause. So I think it's going to be trickier to move him than people think.
Uh-huh. Well, It's kind of unfortunate to watch. I mean, here is arguably one of the better third basemen in baseball when he showed up here, had a chance to really blow it out. The last 2 years haven't been great. Is that a product of the team he's on, or is that a product of the years behind his name and age?
Well, it's partially a product of the stadium. He spent the better part of his career in Colorado, which is a launching pad. But he had some great years here. I mean, the second season in St. Louis where he hit, you know, well, first 2 years, he hit 30 home runs, drove home 100 runs. I mean, those are high-quality seasons for anybody. But this is a Busch Stadium is a tough park to consistently hit home runs in. I think Goldschmidt, for example, is going to have a real resurgence in New York because he goes the other way with power, good contact. He takes the ball to right field. They got a short porch in right field at Yankee Stadium, and Paul Goldschmidt could hit 35 home runs next year.
He is John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. We're going to stick around for the next hour with Chris and Amy. Not sure if they're both here.
Amy is here. Chris is not. Mike Elam is in.
Mike Elam will be with us. There's no Hancock and Kelly, the television show this week. They're going to be 24-7 on the weather.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us today. You're listening to Hancock and Kelly on the Mighty Mox.